The House of Representatives got a somewhat unexpected new speaker after Matthew Hale's unceremonious exit from public life. And the Senate has been in a chaotic bid for control for days on end, sparking protests. I'm Cabin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Matthew Hale, once the leading candidate in the left coalition primary and Speaker of the House, once again disappeared from public life, leaving the speakership open. He also left the left-wing presidential primary, along with Governor Dallas, who on a recent episode of this podcast noted Hale as her biggest obstacle to winning the White House. Representative Rose made waves after she took the mantle, winning out over the more widely anticipated candidate Stebb for the speakership. Later, after it became clear that former Senator Trash would be the left nominee for president, she announced via Twitter that she would be supporting the Libertarian ticket of Governor Sandoval and Senator Bo. I could think of no one better to be our guest for this week. As is unfortunately becoming routine, I have to apologize for the audio. I have no earthly idea what my fiancé was doing to make the god-awful screeching sound you will hear throughout this podcast, but that's just the work-from-home times that we're living in. I will try to make sure that never happens again. With that, Speaker Rose. Speaker Rose, welcome to The Weekly.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to do it. I've got a few things I want to touch on, but just putting aside like the chaos of the last few days that we've seen in Congress, let's take a little step back to the chaos of earlier this week with the speaker being bounced around back and forth. Obviously, you're a part of the left coalition caucus made up of the Social Democrats, United Left, and your party, Global Labor. How did it happen? I know we broke the story from sources, but that got some weird pushback. So just in your words, how did that come down between you and Stebb when it was looking like Stebb originally, and then it seemed like the tides kind of shifted your direction? Can you just walk us through that conversation?
So Stebb and I had a very heated race. It was a very heated debate. It went right up to the deadline, which was, I think, very exciting for everyone, but also kind of created a little bit of a logistical mess, which was figured out by, you know, the members of the caucus. But I think some of us cast our votes a little early on the floor, and then other members wanted to show their support in a different direction. And so it was really the caucus members had their own say. They were their individuals who get to have a say. And with the outpouring of support and the bipartisan support, including the nomination from Governor Sandoval, I basically felt that if I were to continue to reject the nominations, I'd be suppressing their voices and suppressing their ability to choose me as their representative, as their speaker. Mm. So that's how it ended up, where I ended up choosing to accept, and the vote progressed to me being elected as speaker.
All right. I'm glad you brought up the bipartisan angle, because part of what I wanted to ask, the speaker, at least in recent tradition, is a relatively nonpartisan role. There have been some exceptions to that. Obviously, the public record went after former Speaker Arkenstone when he started wielding the gavel in creative partisan ways. But I guess part one of this, do you intend to take the speakership as more of a procedural position or more of a partisan power? Your caucus is in charge of the chamber, so you're going to run it. And then if you're going to look at it more as a more of a procedural position, what was the heated disagreement over who was going to play that role? Why did that matter so much?
I think that to the first question, I'll say my goal has always been being bipartisan. When I was running for state legislature, that was one of my major platforms, is that I wanted to be bipartisan in that position. When I was first running against former Representative Caprice, I also ran on the belief that party loyalty doesn't mean that I can't cross party lines for good legislation. So bipartisanship has always been something I stand for and I believe in. And that I think is going to very easily carry over to my speakership in being as nonpartisan or bipartisan as possible. And then to the second question, I think that for the experience that was expected of the speakership, or is expected of the speakership, Deb didn't assume, because I am so new to legislature, that I would have that experience, because Deb is so experienced in the North.
Sure.
So for that, I think it was more of, I didn't have a lot of background to prove myself with, but I think as I've been on the floor, I've been able to show that my experience, my minimal experience in an actual legislative position, doesn't minimize my awareness and understanding of procedure.
Okay. You mentioned there you kind of proved your case now that you have the role. Can I ask, before you had the opportunity to prove that in these internal caucus discussions of who is going to be the speaker nominee, how did you make the case for yourself over Steb, who is more experienced and kind of more traditionally expected to fill that role?
I don't know that I made that case. I think I made my case not based so much on procedure as it was... I don't think I made that case so much on procedure as I did my presence in the chamber, my activity within the chamber during debates, and my overall, the quality of the legislation that I have provided, which is minimal, but the quality of the legislation I have provided was basically almost completely accepted by the Senate, with only minor, like nominal changes to the wording within that legislation. And that actually is next up on our docket after we finish the Senate bills that have come to us.
Sure.
So I think that my case was more made on the quality of the legislation I've put forward so far, the quality of my debate in the chambers, and the legislative review I've done within the caucus.
Okay. So obviously, in the last few days, the House has been in the news a little bit less than the Senate has. However, we did have a listener question I want to put to you. In your relatively brief time as Speaker so far, what challenges have you faced, and what do you believe should be improved on in terms of overall function in the House?
That's a great question. So I've had a little bit of a rocky start. There's been some back and forth over specifically the motion that was made on the floor for the expulsion of Representative Oliver Price. We've had a little bit of confusion over whether or not Oliver was notified, given proper notification, but he was, and I've been able to clarify that with the caucus, that Oliver was properly notified and was in fact given 48 hours to give a reason for his absence and has not done so, which is why he was expelled. Other than that, the challenges have mostly been my disagreements with how the rules currently function, which is why I'm so grateful that there's been very few amendments to the rules that I have placed on the floor. I believe just finished debate recently, so those will be coming to the vote in the chambers. And I think those House rules will make those amendments to the House rules will make function a lot smoother, more effective. And one of those amendments is a change to the rules of proxy, where we currently have two representatives, and for the sake of their reputation, I'll not speak their names specifically, but they've basically just appointed a proxy the entire session, and that has resulted in basically two unelected officials that have been presiding in the chambers as proxy, which to me feels not representative of what the people would want in the House, because
sure,
those people did not run. So the change in proxy rules, I think, is going to absolutely make our representatives more active and more reputable, because they'll be seeking to fulfill the role that they were elected to.
I want to ask now, kind of turning to the other half of Congress, I know you're not involved, and I wasn't sure who I should pick up from the Senate to have this interview. I should say, I truly need to make a note for myself when I'm recording these episodes to say when we're recording at any time, because it seems like every time I do this, I stop mid-episode to announce the time. We are recording this on Saturday afternoon, about 4 o'clock. So any timeline-related issues, that's where we're at. Anyway, the Senate has been in a bit of a mess the last few days, and full disclosure, I am in some ways a part of that mess. As Vice President, I've been presiding through parts of this. But as someone outside the chamber and who puts forward a bipartisan persona attitude toward your job, what are your thoughts on what's going on and how the Senate should get out of this mess?
Are a lot of really strong senators in the Senate chambers right now, and that has created a sense of challenge amongst all of the members. And I think the minority has some really strong players on their side, some really strong senators on their side, and that has made their procedural efforts stand out.
Mm-hmm.
Which has made, I think, the majority has made them feel slightly subjugated by the minority. And so they're butting heads. And I think that at this point, it's just time for concessions to be made, if that's what needs to happen, or some compromise needs to be made coming from the Senate, so that the Senate can move forward in its procedures. Right now, the American people are just waiting for new legislation to be processed and be put forward to the president, and it's time.
We saw recently, after several days of this stalemate, the majority essentially ignoring rules in present, an effort to kind of, I don't have a non-dramatic way to say this, recognizing that this is overdoing it, they attempted to take over the chair, essentially. Declaring Valerie, who was presiding at the time, absent for a number of hours as she was sitting in the chamber. What are your thoughts? Like, here's where I'm trying to get. Do you approve of the decision to kind of throw the rules to the side, say we're the majority, we have a mandate to legislate, and we're just going to do it? Or would you lean more toward we need to play within the rules we've set, and it's time to compromise, find our way to a productive session that involves the representatives from all the states, not just the majority caucus?
I think that the motion that was put forward by Senator Boe to suspend the rules and proceed with legislation, while it does fit within the current rules of the Senate, seems very outside of any precedent I'm aware of, at least in the House. We don't, as soon as a speaker is missing, the dean doesn't take over to preside over legislation other than maybe closing a vote. But mostly the dean is there to hold elections for a new speaker should the speaker become absent.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a, I think it was a way to placate the American people in a positive way, to placate the American people, Senator Boe's motion. But I do think that the minority was focusing so strongly on not electing a new PPT based on their procedural standards and their process, that I think the majority decided to step outside of the bounds as well. And now, why the minority didn't speak up as the 20 minutes of passing the rules and such was happening, I can't say. I think that they're leaving. I can't say specifically as to why that was their choice, but my understanding is that currently the rules have been ruled out of order,
mm-hmm.
And the PPT has been ruled invalid. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's where we are right now. I guess to that point, would you support, as an outsider, not as someone directly involved, an attempt to overturn that ruling, reinstate drunk as PPT, and pass those rules that were passed only during the out-of-order period?
Only if it's done procedurally correct. I do not agree with either side at this time stepping outside of the bounds of procedure, because the stalemate needs to end at where we're at. Even if it does come down to another motion from either the majority or the minority saying, let's step outside of precedent and get legislature moving without a PPT, that something needs to be done to allow for legislation to be moved on.
Mm-hmm. One of the last questions I have here, you made a little bit of news following Dallas's withdrawal from the left primary, in stepping forward and supporting Sandoval over either presumptively Trash, but possibly Governor Caffe as the left coalition candidate. Can you explain what brought you to that decision? Have you gotten any kind of pushback for stepping outside of the bounds of that kind of coalition agreement, just as a whole, not necessarily every member, but to support the winner of that, the collective primary?
I, at least as far as the support for the winner of the primary, I don't remember agreeing to support the member of the left primary.
That's more what I say.
It's more of an expectation, right? That I would.
Yes.
And I think that my agreement with Sandoval's platform mm-hmm. has less to do with my disagreements with Trash, but more to do with how I align currently with what I see from Sandoval. Now, I as an individual will be speaking solely for myself. I can't speak for the caucus's intentions, for who they plan to vote for.
Sure.
But as far as my endorsement goes on election day, that will only be going to left-wing candidates. Because I've spoken to Sandoval about this privately, it's important for me to have left unity in the House and in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
Whereas the president, I think we can work with either president, either one would be capable of working with us. But if we don't have enough left candidates win for representative or senator, then we can't even have left-wing legislation reach the president's desk. So I think that's where my focus will be on election day as far as endorsement goes. And I think that Trash is a viable candidate to run against Sandoval. It mm-hmm. simply is not, my platform doesn't quite, or excuse me, my position and ideology doesn't quite so much align with his. Now, I am, however, concerned should Sandoval win the presidency of the consequential rise of Phoenix to the governorship. And so that is something that I am considering as well.
Okay. That's been a big topic in recent days, primarily on Twitter is where I've seen it, but I'm also holed up in my basement when I'm not in the Senate, so that's where I just hear what people are talking about. Do you suppose that's going to end up being a big factor in many people's decisions? And obviously you said it's a consideration for you, but would it be worth it to put, for someone who's kind of torn between, let me put it this way, someone who would be inclined to support Sandoval without the Phoenix situation, would it be beneficial to put someone like Trash, who you agree with less than Sandoval, in the most important position, I would argue, in the world, in the presidency of the United States, to prevent Phoenix from becoming governor?
The weighing of the options is something that has definitely been a large factor of why I came out and publicly said that I, as an individual, will be voting for Sandoval. Now, that question of whether or not Sandoval will be willing to compromise with us on some of the more extreme left legislation, whether they'll end up being vetoed should they come to his desk, is a concern of mine as well, even if Phoenix wasn't in wasn't in play here. However, sure. My understanding and my impression of Sandoval so far has been that he's a fairly progressive libertarian, and I think that as long as we're making legislation and passing legislation that fits within the boundaries of his ideology, we'll be able to successfully pass that. Now, I would say also that my fear is for a trash presidency is that as much legislation comes to his desk will be passed, which some of it may not be great. And I think that that's what I've really respected about President Garland, is that some of the things that have passed through both houses, he has found to be not worthy of signature. And I respect that even as he is a member of the SDP.
Yeah, it will certainly be interesting to watch as we get closer here, getting a closer look at the ideologies, not necessarily in terms of policy, but just how each candidate would plan to operate in the office, how willing they would be to check their own caucus in power if they disagreed with the kind of overarching policy. All right, I think that's kind of all I have. While I have you here, anything else you want to say to the weekly audience?
In the coming election, I will be running again for the House, and should we end up with a majority again, I would be honored to be Speaker again. I feel that I can provide a lot more during a full term than a little less than a half of a term. Mm-hmm. My bipartisanship, I think, will show through in the coming days. But as a member of a very small party, it's a really great chance to show just what the GLP stands for.
All right, Speaker Rose, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Here's what else you need to know this week. Former Senator James Hagan was charged with tax fraud along with Secretary Ray, dealing a significant blow to the relatively small libertarian presence in the North. And the battle of the gavel in the Senate turned physical as a staffer for the majority caucus, consisting of members of the Social Democrats, the United Left, and Global Labor, physically removed the gavel from Senator Valerie, who was presiding at the time. The majority then, in defiance of Senate rules, appointed Senator Epsilon as chair and elected Senator Drunk as president pro tem, which he announced as an official Senate communication. The entire episode was later ruled out of order, and the contested position of president pro tem remains ongoing, even as the Senate returns to business. Thank you again to Speaker Rose for joining me this week. If you'd like to join the show, or if you have a story you'd like to see reported, contact me so we can sort out details. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen for the latest episodes with all the news you need to know. The Weekly is a public record podcast.